Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Happy Friday to all of you out there. Today's show is, as has been the case this week, my plans get changed with everything happening in the world. And this time, Kyle Shanahan's press conference takes precedent over some other things. We will get to a scouting report of at least one prospect, sixth round tight end Charlie Warner. There is some overflow questions from mailbag. I didn't do a full mailbag episode this week, so there's some questions I do want to address there, but I want to start with Kyle Shanahan, and he said multiple things, some things about the 49ers. I want to lead with what he said, though, about the state of the world right now, what's going on with protests in the world, and his thoughts on racism. One long answer, an uncut answer. It's a few minutes, but if you haven't heard it, it's really important that you do hear it, and I think everything the coach says is perfect. Well said. This is Kyle Shanahan's response when asked by reporters how he feels about what's going on right now after having discussions with his players all week and what he's experienced through his life and in the NFL.
I mean, people are hurting, and people, black people mainly, are scared, and the disturbing thing is they've been scared for a long time. And this is it. This is a cry for help that they've been given for a long time, and people don't totally listen. And, you know, I think everyone's at fault for that. But I'm not saying black people are, because they're the ones who have been screaming. And I think everyone's at fault for not totally listening. And I think one thing that bothers me the most, just throughout this all and throughout my own life experiences and stuff, is, you know, racism is a big deal in our country right now. That's a fact. That's not debatable. It's always been a big deal. And it is today, just like it was 100 years ago. And I think something, just as a white person, that bothers me, that I don't think all white people realize that. And, you know, there's different parts of this country and stuff. And but a lot of white people, if they don't see it, they don't think it's happening. They associate racism with slavery and stuff from a long time ago. And they're in certain parts where if they don't see it, they don't think it's happening. And I think, and that's the problem. Racism's all over. And this is what black people deal with every day. And white people are very sheltered to that and ignorant. And that's why I think that's the message that's been missed. I can't tell you, like, growing up and stuff and being in situations that bothers me the most, that resonates throughout all this, and hearing all our players, you know, I've been in sports my whole life. And, you know, I've had white friends, black friends, Asian friends, all types of friends my whole life. And I've been fortunate to be in situations where I was in communities or teams and stuff, or where it wasn't a big deal. The same stuff I see in my kids, and I'll keep my kids in those type of situations. So it's never a big deal for them. And it wasn't for me. But there's stuff as I got older, like with my black friends and stuff, that I can promise you was consistent with all black friends, wherever I had them. You know, I moved everywhere in my life. Never lived anywhere longer than 4 years. So I've been all over this country, and I've had all types of friends. One thing I can tell you is consistent. Some of my friends, some of my black friends, some of the toughest guys I've been around, just awesome dudes, but I've never seen get scared of anything. And I can't tell you how many times I'm with one of my black friends and we're around a cop, and I can feel something different in those guys. They're scared. And it's something that has always bothered me. And I've been in some situations worse than others, but regardless, I know how they feel. I don't know how they feel, but I can feel that they feel different than me. And that's something that is a fact. It doesn't matter whether it's a black guy in California, a black guy in Atlanta. It doesn't matter. That's something that they all feel. I don't know Champ Bailey very well. I know my dad does. I know John Lynch does. When he gave his Hall of Fame speech last year about this stuff, and I could see the passion in Champ's voice and the fear that he had for his kids and how real it was. And that's the same stuff I've seen in my friends since, you know, I was 17, and when, you know, we got caught sneaking out. And the difference between the black friend who was scared and me, who actually wasn't, because I thought I had rights. And that's a white privilege that not everyone realizes. And people need to know, just because you don't see it, it doesn't mean it's not there. And white people have to acknowledge that this is a fact. This isn't debatable. And there's nothing more apparent than in what happens to numbers wise with black people and what's going on with the police force. And the numbers say it. I also, life experiences of all black people say it. And that's something that isn't debatable. And we can't confuse that with anything else or any individual. That's a fact. It's gone on way too long. And I think now, I think white people are listening more than I've ever heard before, which is good. And that's the starting point, because it's happened too long and it's very clear, and I don't want to debate it anymore. No one does. Open your eyes.
Open your eyes. A very passionate statement from 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan, and probably something that a lot of people need to hear. And if you didn't need to hear it, it helps to hear it again. Racism exists. You may not like it, but it does. You may not be racist yourself. And just being a good person isn't enough right now. Just paying lip service isn't enough either. There's a lot of noise out there. The time for debating some of those things is over. I wholeheartedly agree with the coach on that. It's time to focus on the issues. It's long past time to focus on those, act on those, find the signal through the noise. The entire press conference, definitely worth listening to. You can find it everywhere, 49ers.com, YouTube. He talks about minority hiring, goes into more detail about all kinds of things. Shanahan spoke about his football team as well, and specifically quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo, throwing all of his support behind him as if he hasn't already this offseason. But you might be surprised what Shanny says he thinks Garoppolo can become. Jimmy G, scouting report on the 49ers' sixth-round draft pick, and more coming up. Are you shopping for car parts? Do-it-yourselfers out there, check out rockauto.com. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com is also a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than charging prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. The timing was perfect here with Kyle Shanahan's press conference with what I talked about and my guest Grant Cohn on Wednesday's show. We talked about where Garoppolo can be, where he is and what he could be. What ceiling does Jimmy Garoppolo have? Grant a little bit more pessimistic about the development of Jimmy Garoppolo, but I think that there's a lot more there. And I just think that there's been some hindrances in his career. One is reps, you know, playing time, of course. And then last year, the ACL, and even this offseason is not ideal, right? So even next year, there's a chance for more to have the first time ever coming off a full 16 game slate and then have a full regular offseason into another full 16 games. In 2021 will be the first time he'll have that opportunity. Even it's pretty crazy how his career has gone. Here's the coach on his quarterback.
His thoughts are a lot clearer because he's not worrying about an ACL and rehab. And like you just said, I mean, he's 100% focused and getting better mentally from knowing the offense, from just knowing defense. Not just everyone says learning the offense. Jimmy's learned the offense. He's fine with that. It's just being automatic. It's understanding coverage. It's going through everything where, I mean, I can't tell you how much more I know as a coach in year 17 or whatever than I did in year two. And that never stops. And so to go through an off season where you don't have to rehab the whole time, it gives you a chance to take that to another level. I think Jimmy's fired up for this year. Last year was his first year to play a whole year, and he had a hell of a year and got us very close to winning the Super Bowl. And, you know, when you have to talk to Jimmy about one of the best quarterbacks of all time being available, I know Jimmy has a goal to be that. And I know Jimmy, I believe Jimmy has the ability to be that. And that's what both of us are going for. And if we can get him there and he has the ability to do it, we're going to be pretty happy with who we have for a long time.
Well, there you go. GOAT status for the future Jimmy Garoppolo. If that's not confidence, I mean, I don't know how Kyle Shanahan can throw any more support behind Jimmy Garoppolo than what he has this offseason, saying no to one of the greatest to ever play the game at quarterback, and then what he just said about what Garoppolo can become and the level he can get to. And I fully expect Jimmy Garoppolo to take that next step in 2020. Just more reps, more time. That's one of the few things he's missed in his NFL career so far. He's now getting that with Kyle Shanahan, one of the best coordinators in the NFL. And an interesting note about learning, it's not only knowing the offense, it's reps against defenses and seeing what teams are throwing at you. And that's constantly going to change. So I thought that was a great point by Shanahan there when it comes to playing quarterback in the NFL. I want to go to Twitter. Greebs had a tweet that our conversation Wednesday with Grant sparked, and he has some comparisons to make with 29-year-old Jimmy Garoppolo to a certain Hall of Fame quarterback, he says, after five seasons in the league. Of course, that quarterback being Steve Young. Greebs goes on to say, I'm not saying Jimmy G is Steve Young, but we all saw what Young did when he finally got his real chance. Jimmy has played in 12 fewer games, and every category aside from rushing, Jimmy has outplayed Steve Young's pace. Different game, sure, but relevant. And for those pointing out that Steve Young played on some atrocious Bucks teams, may I remind you of the 49ers in 2017 and 2018. They were not great teams. Give Jimmy a fair shake before you make up your mind, or don't, but I'm certainly allowing for him to take the next step. And looking at those statistics, so the first 5 years in the league for Jimmy Garoppolo and Steve Young, and look, it's hard to compare eras, so just looking stat for stat is difficult. And Young, aside from starting 14 games in his second year with the Bucks, hadn't become the Niners' starting quarterback yet. That didn't happen until later on. Let's see, how old is Steve Young and Joe Montana? Aren't that far off in age, by the way. Only about 5 years different. So in 91, that's when Joe Montana was hurt, missed the entire season with his injured elbow. Montana was 35 at that point. Steve Young, that was his age 30 season in 1991, started 10 games. Niners went 5-5. You started to see what he could be, though. A 101.8 passer rating. You always had some idea athletically what Steve Young could be, but that was when people were like, okay, this is a big-time starting NFL quarterback. 92, he ended up going 14-2 for the 49ers, and obviously that was a big-time era there for the Steve Young-led 49ers. But back to Grebe's point about their first 5 years, so going up to 1990 when Steve Young was 29, just like Jimmy Garoppolo. They were within 8 attempts of each other, but Jimmy G has over 100 more completions, 67.5% for his career for Jimmy Garoppolo. Steve Young, 55.8% passer. Over 1,000 more yards, about 10 more touchdowns, passer rating 100 even for Garoppolo's career. Steve Young, only 78.4 at that point. And again, you're different eras, more air yards for Jimmy Garoppolo. Just across the board, Garoppolo's numbers are better, but the point isn't so much about, oh, okay, whose quarterback's numbers were better there, the raw box scores, because that's not really telling the whole story. The point is, you could grow a lot at this point in your career at quarterback. Quarterbacks play into their 40s now, so Jimmy Garoppolo could have a massive, crazy 10-year run. So I don't think it's even that insane for what we just heard, although optimistic, what Kyle Shanahan just said about what Jimmy Garoppolo can be. So there could be a small jump in Garoppolo's play. There could still be a huge leap. There could be a couple of steps still going forward for Jimmy Garoppolo. And I think the number one key to his career, just like for Steve Young, is get a good coaching staff, get a good team around you, and get those reps. Steve Young didn't have those things until he was in his 30s. Jimmy Garoppolo now has a chance to have maybe somewhat of a similar career path to Steve Young. And it's odd that that's probably one of the more similar careers. And you don't see that very often, obviously, in the NFL for a reason. And most quarterbacks are pretty well set in what they're going to be with their career path by age 29. But I think there is a really good argument and at least the possibility for Jimmy Garoppolo to take another step or two steps with the 49ers as a quarterback. So let's wait and see. Let's kick back and watch Jimmy Garoppolo in 2020. Maybe we're talking about him as a tier one quarterback in the NFL in the not so distant future. Now, if he doesn't take another step, if he plateaus or maybe even gets worse this year, we might have to have a tough conversation next offseason. But right now, I'm pretty optimistic about what Jimmy Garoppolo can be in Kyle Shanahan's offense. And I do expect, would like a more veteran pass catching group at wide receiver. But aside from that, I don't see any reason why Jimmy Garoppolo can't be a lot better even in 2020, which would mean he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. A tweet from a couple weeks ago I never discussed, but I have marked here, and I don't want to get to it before it's too far gone. This is from Travis. He says, what's the most frustrating deficiency to watch your team go through. To me, it's run defense. Watching an opposing running back gash you up the middle is just heart-wrenching. I agree. That's what the 49ers were crushing teams, and your soul gets crushed along with a powerful running game. And the 49ers did that to playoff teams this year. I think that is still the most demoralizing thing in football. And it's been that way for a very long time. It absolutely is. And it's funny because the 49ers, John Lynch talked about after drafting a defensive tackle in round one, he mentioned that the Seahawks have 350-pound guards, and it's tough for the 49ers to hold up there. And they wanted to stay big in the middle and stay strong along the defensive line. And they brought a 324-pounder in at defensive tackle. I don't know exactly what weight they want Kinlaw to play at, closer to 315 like he was at the Senior Bowl when he dominated there, or more like he's been all over the place weight-wise. He's still not as good of a run blocker as far as what his production was in college as he should be for his size, but I think he should be able to get there and obviously has the size and strength to be that. But yes, I kind of agree with you, Travis. That's definitely the most demoralizing way to lose a game is when you cannot stop a running game, specifically that running game right up the middle. Like you're beaten. And then everyone starts moving a little bit slower, and then you're susceptible to everything that that offense can do. And maybe you have to try too hard, put more people inside. Then you don't have enough people in the back end to cover. That's one of the most difficult things. And one of the reasons this kind of ties in with Hiren's question. He said, what can we expect from Kentavious Street to start next season? What does his ceiling look like on this team? And I don't know what Kentavious Street's ceiling looks like now. I think it's after what we've seen and see how hard it is for him to get on the field. I think maybe when they drafted him, even though he had an ACL, they thought the ceiling was probably a little bit higher. I still think he's very similar to Solomon Thomas, very similar to Eric Armstead as far as style of play, even though he's shaped different and all those guys have a little bit different strength and weaknesses. Basically, he's a bigger end that can rush from the inside, not quite big enough to be a full-time defensive tackle like we talked about with Javon Kinlaw being 324 pounds. But I think he can bring a little something, and he's really strong. He's really weight room strong. You can see the strength in his hands at times. But he's another one of those interior rushers that I thought would be able to at least somewhat help ease the pain of losing DeForest Buckner. And if the 49ers could have brought in, you know, say, Snacks Harrison, I always use him as an example just because he was on the street and he was cut by his team, so he wouldn't have counted toward the compensatory formula. Bring in, if you want a 350-pounder, bring in a 350-pounder, a nose tackle type, and then filter some of these guys in with Armstead and Street and Solomon Thomas to rush the passer. And you can kind of do both of those things. You can stuff the run and make sure that on early downs, you've got that beef up front. And it's like, look, you're not going to push us around. And then they have a lot of tweeners already. Utilize all those players that are currently on the roster to help stay fresh and go get after the quarterback. But the 49ers decided to do it all in one with Javon Kinlaw. And look, I'm not trying to say anything about the Kinlaw pick. And I do like Kinlaw, and I think he was a really good prospect. And he was a top 15 prospect for me, and they needed to get one of those top 15 players, and they did. I know I bring up some things about him sometimes, and people might think I'm down on him. I like Kinlaw, and I think he's going to be fantastic, and he's a monster. So as long as he develops his technique and his ability as a run stuffer, and he plays up to his 324 pounds and then develops his pass rush moves and continues to be disruptive there, he's going to be a really good player for a really long time. But then if he's on the field most downs and you have DJ Jones, you have Eric Armstead, there's not a lot of room for Solomon Thomas and Kentavious Street to filter in on the inside and rush. And you don't really want those guys rushing from the outside on third downs. And so there's really not a lot of room. So as far as long-term looking ahead, and I always say you have to believe what the team tells you. It tells me that they don't have much of a plan for Solomon Thomas or Kentavious Street or some of the other tweeners long-term. They signed Armstead. They drafted Kinlaw. They've got DJ Jones. I think those are the guys in the plans inside for the most part to do the heavy lifting for the 49ers. Coming up, one note I almost forgot on when the 49ers coaching staff and facility might start to open, and they might be the last team in the league that does so, and the scouting report on 49ers sixth round tight end, Charlie Warner. So a quick note, earlier in the week there was a memo sent out from the commissioner's desk that said teams or coaches will be allowed back at team facilities and staff, not numbering more than 100 staff at any facility, starting today, Friday. But as Dan Graziano of ESPN reports, the NFL anticipates that the 49ers are the only team that will not be able to get into its facility today, and that the league says the team is aware and supportive of this plan and has been in communication with its local authorities to obtain all necessary permissions when available. So Santa Clara County has been somewhat behind even other counties in California opening things back up. So it might be a little bit longer for coaches and staff to get in there. Hopefully within the next 10 days or so, California will start to open up a little more. There is some thought that around the 15th, things will start to happen. In that regard, we'll see if Santa Clara County follows suit. And one big factor in all this, and I don't think it's as big a deal as far as coaches getting in, if it would help the 49ers that much to be working at the office rather than working at home. I think they've done a pretty good job and are pretty comfortable right now working at home, even if they would like to get back to the office at some point very soon. It's not a huge competitive advantage or disadvantage for the 49ers if all 31 other teams are at the office coach-wise. But as far as when players start to be able to get on the field, if the 49ers aren't allowed, I think the league will not allow any, because that's a big problem if, you know, you can't allow some other teams to have mini camps and not allow the 49ers on the field and practicing. So as far as players coming in and getting work on the field, whether it's, you know, a rookie camp or a quarterback school quickly before, you know, a week or two before training camp or something like that, if the Niners aren't able to, I don't think any team will be allowed to, and it could be something that holds up the rest of the league and holds up training camp, because I don't, or they might let the 49ers, or, you know, push the 49ers in another direction to start training camp in another county, in another location, whether that's in California or Arizona or wherever. But as of now, teams are not allowed to have training camp outside of their facility. So a team like the Dallas Cowboys can't go to LA or Oxnard or wherever it is that they usually do training camp. They're not allowed to do that. So they've got to practice in that heat this year in Texas. And there's a number of teams that still go away. The Niners used to go to Rockland College and do their training camp there. The Raiders used to go to Napa. I wonder if there will be some. And I wonder, do the Raiders still go to Napa now that they're in Las Vegas? I bet they don't. They probably have some kind of a training camp there in the Las Vegas area. But yeah, we'll see what happens with the 49ers when they open up. They are going to be what looks to be the last team in Santa Clara County, as far as all the counties in the NFL, is going to be the last one to open and allow people back at the facility. So something definitely to monitor when it comes to the 49ers. Charlie Warner, sixth round tight end out of Georgia. Who did the 49ers get in Charlie Warner, the tight end? Well, the easy scouting report, and I think Charlie Warner is a very easy evaluation. Sometimes players, it's like, I know exactly what this guy is. Sometimes it's a little more difficult, and it gets a lot easier when you're in the sixth round and you see a tight end there that says, okay, this is the best blocking tight end available, maybe in the draft period. We need someone who is a block first tight end. We have an open spot on the roster. This is a very easy position for a player to come and make the football team. So all those things really lined up for Charlie Warner and the 49ers in the sixth round. He doesn't even look as big as he's listed either. I think it's maybe because he's still, so yeah, maybe some room to grow. He's a bulked up receiver and runner in high school. He weighed in at the combine 6'4 and 5'8, so almost 6'5, 244 pounds. Big hands, a 4.78 40, which is not bad for what he is as a block first tight end, which is interesting. We'll get to that. 1.68 10-yard split, which is solid. 34.5-inch vertical jump, which is good. 10-inch broad jump, fine. 4.46 short shuttle, 4.46. 7.18 3 cone, not bad for a 245-pounder, and 21 bench press reps. Those are not bad workout numbers for someone who is considered a blocking tight end, a block first tight end. Well, why is he pretty athletic for a blocking tight end? Well, he was a big time recruit coming out of high school. It was in Georgia. He was, I want to get the numbers right. He was a 2000 yard rusher and a 1500 yard receiver with 50 touchdowns on offense. He also played the defensive side of the ball, 300 tackles and 10 interceptions in high school. So he had massive production in high school, was a big time recruit. So he sort of played receiver, running back, linebacker, safety. I'm not sure what exact position he was. He was basically just a do-it-all guy in high school on the offensive side of the ball. I've never seen any of his tape or what that looked like, but he was also a discus thrower. So athlete, like big time athlete on the track team, on the football team. Then he got to Georgia, and they made him a full-time tight end, and he hardly saw the field early in his career at Georgia, and really, production-wise, as a receiver, had almost zero production. Finally got on the board as a senior with his one and only touchdown in his college career. So he had 50 touchdowns in high school, one in his college career over 4 years. Five catches as a freshman, started two games, started one game as a sophomore, nine catches for 100 yards that year. His junior year, 2018, he had 11 receptions. His biggest output, he broke out two starts. He played in all 14 games, 11 catches, 148 yards. And then his senior season, only nine catches for 78 yards, only averaged 8.7 yards per catch. And he had the one touchdown. Why the disparity in production? Maybe bulking up really hurt his playmaking ability. I think maybe he wasn't as, I don't know the best way to put it. It's like he has some athleticism, but he's not shifty at all. His athleticism is probably when he was at the high school level and was a little bit smaller. He was probably bigger and stronger than everybody, but also was pretty fast and on par speed-wise. You get to the college level and at a big-time school like Georgia and in that conference, and all of a sudden, you're trying to bulk up to play tight end, and you're not super athletic compared to everybody, and maybe you're even a little bit small at tight end. The one thing he had going for him, though, was his attitude, the way he plays, the physicality, and I have no doubt that's what the 49ers fell in love with about Charlie Warner. He blocks his butt off every single play. It's like he loves contact. He loves nothing more than making contact with opponents. And if that sounds familiar, a lot of people draw that connection between Charlie Warner and George Kittle. A block first tight end that was severely underutilized as a pass catcher in college, loves contact, plays like his hair is on fire. That's what Charlie Warner is. Now, he doesn't have the athletic ability that George Kittle had. Kittle showed a lot more explosiveness in college and was a lot more productive, even though he was less productive than he probably should have been at Iowa. Charlie Warner only surpassed 10 catches in one season and had the one career touchdown. But you have to cover the guy still. You know, he's not a plotter. He is not a sixth offensive lineman, somewhat like Levine Toilolo had been for the 49ers. He's a smaller, faster player, which is why he also profiles as probably the lead backup eventually and maybe right away for Kyle Juszczyk at fullback. So he might be able to do a lot of those hybrid things, tight end, in line, split him out and block people, move him around like an H-back on the wing, put him in the backfield as a lead blocker like Kyle Juszczyk. You could hand him the ball. You can throw him the ball. He'll catch the ball. He won't make a ton of plays after the catch like George Kittle. He's not going to shake people loose necessarily, but he has enough athletic ability to play. He's not great at contested catch situations either, but he will get after it, and he will make you honest on defense. You have to cover him, and if he gets the ball, he can scoot enough, 4-7-8 40 time, he can go, and he's a no-nonsense guy after the catch and can make some plays. So he's not going to be somebody that you ever envision as a starter, even though he might get some starts next to his name just because, you know, eventually the Niners would go out into a two tight end set and they want their better blocking tight end on the field with Kittle or something like that, and he gets some starts. But he's not going to be somebody that the 49ers ever lean on. But I think that's fine because what he can do with his, we saw it in high school with his production, right? So he can tackle people. He'll be valuable on special teams. He'll be a number three tight end at worst and be able to block the heck out of people. You can move him around, use him in different situations on offense. He can back up both tight end and fullback positions, play special teams. So he has some value. I think there's a clear path to Charlie Warner, unlike some sixth rounders. Unlike Caden Smith last year, did not make the roster. Some people were like, oh man, can't believe this. What a wasted pick. He didn't make the roster. I actually like Charlie Warner a little bit better. I don't think the 49ers are going to miss Caden Smith necessarily. And I think for what the 49ers do, Charlie Warner is a really good fit. And the Niners got, you know, for a superlative, they got the best blocking tight end in the draft maybe. So that's a nice get, I think, in the sixth round. Someone has a clear path to making the roster as a rookie, and we'll see how well he does developing in this odd rookie offseason that he has, and I think he will file in there and be the third tight end probably and make the roster, and we'll see how much Charlie Warner gets utilized as a rookie. So nice draft pick. It's a fine pick. If you're at this point, if you have a Super Bowl roster and you're drafting players that make the roster in the sixth round, I think it's a solid selection. So not a home run. He's not going to wow anybody. He's not going to be the next George Kittle. I saw somebody say that he was, they compared him to Rob Gronkowski because he's athletic but can also block people. And I was like, what are you doing? Rob Gronkowski, like the one thing he can't be is Gronk. You can't make somebody 6'7", 260, right? He's definitely not that. But he can be a fine rotational backup player. Maybe give you a little more juice in the passing game than he did in college. There's something extra there, I think. So that's Charlie Warner, tight end out of Georgia, rookie for the 49ers. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. My guest Monday, Oscar Aparicio of a competing 49ers podcast from Niners Nation, Better Rivals podcast. Always fun chatting with Oscar. Been on his show. He's been on this show before. Always a good talk. So tune into that Monday. Continue our rookie profiles with Juwan Jennings, the seventh rounder, and we'll get to some undrafted free agents. One I like a whole lot, and a few more I'm warming up to quite a bit as I start to watch some of these players. So we'll get to some of that. Whatever the news is, have more guests all off season long. Of course, a Winky Wednesday and a mailbag. Hit me at BD Peacock on Twitter. Talk to you then right here, Locked On 49ers.